Well, on this very special day of celebration of 9 years that have gone in some ways in a flash and in other ways like a lifetime, I want to talk to you a little bit about what it really means to follow a universal path of love. And I wanted to start by telling you that twice in my lifetime, I have done something that's both unconventional and very public. Something that the mainstream would inevitably misunderstand or trivialize or even protest. The second of these was making my passion for an inclusive message of spirituality really public. Really public through my books and through this ministry. And I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But the first time was when I was still only in my 20s. It was during a period of a decade and a half when I lived in Europe, mainly in England, but also in what was then a divided Berlin, a city that was very radicalizing as well as very radical. About three quarters of the way through that time, and after some years of working in mainstream British publishing, which I absolutely loved, I founded a very public feminist publishing house. It was committed not just to women's writing, but to writing that challenged thinking, conventional norms, that sought in any way whatsoever to diminish women and keep us in our place. I couldn't help asking then, as I've asked hundreds of times since, and as I had asked hundreds of times since I was a little girl, what was that place? And who was deciding? The Women's Press was a women's publishing house, and I was asked constantly, why a women's publishing house? Why something special for women? Why? As though it was not entirely self-evident. Why? But of course I had to realize, and it took me a while to realize, I think I was a very slow learner, that for many people any space that women were occupying was too much space, and that any voices that speak out against the status quo should be silenced. Any voice that speaks out against the status quo, particularly for a group that is not at the top of the hierarchy, is always regarded as too shrill, too aggressive, or somehow out of place. Even some of the people who would benefit from those changes are remarkably committed to things staying the same. But life itself is dynamic. This is an absolute truth that I have discovered and rediscovered in every moment of my existence, and I'm sure you have too. Change itself is inevitable, and so the big question is, what kinds of change are we going to make, and who will they benefit? This is the question that we need to bring to the heart of our lives almost on a daily basis. Change is inevitable. Which change are we going to cooperate with? Which changes are we going to lead with? And who will they benefit? In every life, not just in my life, which has its public phases as well as its very private ones, in every life, there are crossroads moments in which we are actually making choices. Choices about the changes that we will cooperate with or withdraw from. We can't always see those crossroads moments coming, or even know them for what they are when we're there. But often they're preceded by a time of confusion, or even depression, or illness, or grim suffering. And there's power in that, because those times are when we can no longer take for granted the answers we thought we had. Those are immensely potent times. They are the times that bring us to our knees and that tell us that everything we know isn't everything there is to know. I wrote about something like that in Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love, which I described to my own daughter this morning as the favorite of my books. And I want to read you a very short passage which I think exemplifies it. There is such fierce and free beauty in any rare moment in which we stand upright between earth and sky, conscious of the blessings of existence. We and nature are one, sang the poet Andrew Harvey. One dance, one feast, one radiance. It is easy to complain that the dance is not to our liking, or that the feast has turned sour, or that the radiance has dimmed. We can rage against that. We can shout that life is unfair, that we deserve better, that suffering's stick should tap some other shoulder. Or we can look around us. Looking around us, we see that others also suffer and need our help. We can see that the seasons of suffering are often and quite incredibly followed by seasons of insight, wisdom, and joy. We can see that sometimes the suffering is of our own making, and it is we who must make amends. We can see that help comes when we ask for it, sometimes wearing strange disguises. And here's a teaching from Ezekiel. A new heart I will give you, and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will take out of your flesh the heart of stone, and I will give you a heart of flesh. Roberto Assagioli tells this story of three stone cutters, all employed on the building of a cathedral in medieval times. When the first was asked what he was doing, he said angrily, "As you see, I'm cutting stones." The second replied pragmatically, "I'm earning a living for my family." And the third said joyfully, "I am building a great cathedral." Only when we know what we share will we also understand how compassion emerges from truth and love and forgiveness and wholeness and changes everything. That promise in Ezekiel means everything to me, that the heart of bitterness or aggression or indifference, that is the heart of stone, can be taken from us through any moment of enlightenment. And the fleshy heart that is the seat of the mystical heart can be returned to us in any moment. Our moment of enlightenment may not be as dramatic as Thomas Merton's, but it changes not only us, but how we see the world, how we see one another, how we see ourselves. It gives us the chance to choose attitudes that bring healing and reduce harm. It brings us personal happiness and it brings us meaning. It benefits everyone around us. It brings us to a knowledge of our interdependence, our interspirituality, our interbeing. And that's a very shorthand way of talking about what the Buddhists call bodhicitta, that any measure of our own personal enlightenment is never for our own sake only. It couldn't possibly be, because as we benefit ourselves, we benefit our entire human family. As we grow up, we all grow up together. As we keep ourselves small, we keep everybody small. It was John Donne who said, "No man is an island, no woman either." And the prayer of refuge in the bodhicitta ends with, "May I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings." But even that is inaccurate, because according to some teachings of Buddhism, you are already attained. You are already a Buddha, or I might say, you are already an enlightened soul. It is simply opening yourself up to that knowledge, which is, of course, very challenging. Let me put it another way. We are in this life together. This is the inescapable truth. We are in this life together, and some of us have a marvelous, glorious, inspired possibility to to really recognize and act upon our knowledge that how we develop ourselves creates the society in which we live. My religion is kindness, His Holiness the Dalai Lama has said. Everything else is ornamentation. Everything else is ornamentation. And Guru Nanak, who founded the Sikh religion, has said, religion lies not in the yogi's patched garment, nor in his staff, nor in besmearing the body with ashes. To live uncontaminated amid worldly temptations is the secret of religion. Religion lies not in empty words. The person who regards and behaves with this knowledge that all humankind is equal, that is the religious person. And that sentence means everything to me. Everything to me. The person who regards all of humankind as equal. And so that brings me to the second of my personal and very public moves away from mainstream thinking. Sexual politics, a lifetime of activism, and a driving need to question the status quo, which has got me into lots of trouble, lots and lots of times. And also some extraordinary experiences in the 6 countries in which I've lived. All of that has shaped me. And all of that has told me that I could not give my heart and soul to any one religious structure or institution that in any way sought to divide our human family or sought to create a hierarchy within our human family so that some people were more deserving of love than others. Not all religions do this in the same way. There are variations on the theme. But all religions, especially in their most conventional and highly defended forms, do it. But that's not the end of the story either. At the heart of all the religious philosophies and all the faiths, there are also teachings that are utterly sublime in their beauty. Teachings that are unconditionally healing, inclusive, life-loving, and forgiving. And it is those that we learn through living love. Some of you here today maintain very deep, very faithful links and relationships with the faith in which you grew up or the faith that you have chosen as an adult. And I utterly respect that. Some of you here have come to a meaningful spirituality in your own way, including what we now call the wisdom teachings, the mystical teachings that bring us into the heart of everyday living, that take us to the heart of those apparent simplicities. This, above all, love one another. In the span of my parents' generation and my own generation and even my children's generation, we have seen some very great changes. From a world in which Catholics and Protestants despised one another and were largely forbidden to worship together, in a world where different groups of Protestants had their rabid theological differences, and where so-called Christians could put 6 million Jews, social activists, homosexuals and gypsies to death, where racial segregation even in churches was passionately defended, where the so-called Irish Troubles made my then home city of London unpredictable and dangerous sometimes. From all of that, we have come a very long way. And let's be so grateful for the courage of everybody who led us away from the confines, the chains, the shackles of such thinking. But the question for all of us, and there's always another question, Have we come far enough? Have we come far enough to look at one another in the eyes and see not a label, but a fellow, a sister, a brother human being? Above everything, a fellow, a sister, a brother human being. I would have to say no. Not yet. Not while we still exile, not while we still go to war, not while we still judge, diminish, and demean. So how timely then, how urgent it is for us to return to the divinely beautiful heart that beats in all the traditions and protects what's true to them all, the heart of love, the heart of interest, the heart of respect, and above everything, the heart of inclusion. Open your eyes, said Goethe. The whole world is full of God. Talking about religion is not enough. Talking about the problems that religion causes or the solace that religion brings is not enough. My call, my personal call, my call to ministry, which I celebrate with 10 years since my ordination, I celebrate that today, has developed through a lifetime and is still developing now. And it arises from an unshakable belief that our human nature is also divine. As the Sufi poet Kabir says, here is Kabir's idea. As the river gives itself into the ocean, what is inside me also moves inside you. So I live from a trust. A trust that as a human family we can do better, and I believe you do too. That we can look at one another and see friends, not enemies, whatever our differences in perspective or experience. See people with whom we may profoundly differ, but whom we can still value as souls on a human journey. Our services here at Pitt Street and the commitment that you and I and so many people beyond this place have made to live an inclusive spiritual lived life is our small, special, precious, invaluable contribution to a kinder and safer world. To a world in which the seeds of a healing spirituality can be watered and delighted in, where compassion is nurtured and also great joy, where we can hold or be willing to be held, where we can hold and be willing to hold all people in our hearts without exception. My 30 years as a mother and my lifetime of seeking a God who judges and abandons no one, the God who not only loves but is love, these have been the pivotal experiences of my life and my greatest blessing. I thank you with all my heart for all that you are doing, and for sharing what I am doing with me. Peace be in your hearts, and peace be in our world. Blessed be.